You are listening to Sounds Good, a podcast brought to you by Choirmate.
Welcome to Sounds Good, the podcast by Choirmate, where we explore the power of collective singing and the people shaping the future of choral music. I'm your host, Dr. Jacqueline Normandy, founder of the Modern Conducting Academy. Today's guest is a conductor, visionary, and voice for the transformative power of choir. Dr. Burak Onur Evdim is the principal conductor of the Turkish State Polyphonic Choir, vice president of the International Federation of Choral Music, and the festival director of the 2023 World Symposium on Choral Music in Istanbul. He's here today to talk about something deeper than just performance: what choirs actually do for society, for our sense of identity, and for the possibility of peace. Burak, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
I'm excited. We're going to begin by the origins and artistic journey of your transformative journey so far. Let's begin with your own path. You actually began in political science before pursuing music. What called you to choral conducting, and when did you realize that it was more than just a professional path for you, that it was your calling, and you switched from political science over to music?
Yeah, good question. Nothing called me because I was already there. I didn't do any switch, actually. I was singing in choirs since high school. I'm a graduate of the German High School of Istanbul. And actually, I studied in an American university in Istanbul. So it's called Bosphorus University. It's very, very famous, one of the best universities for engineering and social sciences. What I did was totally choral music in the university. And I remember already that in our first years with our choir and the team, we started to organize this festival, this youth choirs festival in the university by the students. And suddenly choirs from Germany, Hungary, and Spain, and all over Turkey, we were hosting them. And that was already a starting point to see this is much more than just singing. It's much more than only making music together. That's a part of it. But choirs can make a lot of difference in the world, and that we have seen it in many instances. So yeah, for me it was not a switch. It was quite where I was from my young years.
They seem to work really well together. I remember when I was a graduate student at the University of Michigan, some of our best students, our best singers, were engineering and math majors. We shared the North Campus together. So I've always found that because they're both frequency-based, science-based, math-based, they work very well in tandem.
Yeah, yeah. And everybody can sing. And that is the reason it brings everybody together. There is a boundary to different kinds of arts, which is very, very normal. To play a violin in an orchestra, you really have to study at least 4, 5, 6 years, maybe more. Of course, to sing in a professional choir like ours in Ankara, yeah, of course you study opera, and we only take people who studied music. But to sing in a collective way, you can just start and do it. And there are so many examples in the world that singing brings people together. I think the reason that many, many different types of people come together in choirs, and that's a very interesting model for society too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's go to some of your mentors.
Yeah.
So you've worked with mentors like Maria Ginant and Johannes Prinz.
Yeah.
What is something one of them taught you that you still carry today?
It's interesting because they are both still mentors of mine. I work with Maria Ginant. She's still vice president of IFCM. She has served many, many years, but despite many years, I see her still with a lot of energy, maybe more every year. It's a lot to learn from her wisdom. She's from Venezuela, from a country where maybe you don't have the ideal conditions for culture and arts financially. But what they have managed to create in Venezuela, starting with El Sistema, with Jose Abreu, and many, many other systems of social projects, that's exemplary. And Maria still is, for me, the one who dreams. She's pushing me towards realizing dreams for future, which starts today. And for Johannes, that's a totally different story. And it's interesting because Maria and Johannes, they shared actually the World Youth Choir in the beginning of 2000s. So they know each other. But Johannes Prinz is from Vienna, from Austria. And she's a totally different school. From a totally different school. And he is, I think, the most well-planned and structured person on the earth living right now. so he taught me a lot of things. But maybe the most important is, which I still try to share with fellow conductors in masterclasses, is that as a conductor, we are not on the podium for ourselves. We are on the podium for the singers. Our role is quite interesting because we will talk about this, but we don't make a sound, as said by Benjamin Zander and in his very, very famous TED talk. And that's quite interesting. I think we need to contemplate about that because, yeah, as he puts it, our power depends on the power of us to enable singers to bring their potential into life. And Johannes taught me there are many, many great ways of doing it. So of course we can talk more about this, but it's, I think the basic thing is, and also if we think about the social projects we carry out in IFCM and our dreams with Maria and our fellow colleagues in IFCM, this is not about us. It's about something bigger than us. That's why it's quite interesting, because many things in this world are individual, especially nowadays. But there are some pathways that brings us to an upper point, like we zoom out from our daily individual fights, and choral music is one of them.
One of the best things, I noticed that this yin and yang aspect of your two main mentors, the structure and the more flow, and they both have each other, but in different ways. And the best thing that ever happened to my musicianship was to move to a jungle town with sketchy internet, no music shop, and it's like you just learn to make music with what you have. And I look at the Facebook groups and social media where people are, there's always the excuses. I don't have this, the funding, the resources, the risers, yeah, the buses, blah, 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 the costumes. Yeah. And there are people around the world making stunning music, heartfelt yeah, music with none of that. And if we're taught that we can only make music in this structured container, in this structured way. If it's not perfect, it's trash. It really does a disservice to the joy that people are able to receive.
Yeah.
And so I noticed that beautiful yin and yang in those professors. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I think there is never a perfect conditions that will come true. That is theoretically impossible. And even if it would be possible for one instance, the next moment it will be imperfect again because you would like to want more. I think we have a lot to learn from the world. You know, I just watched lately this Arvo Pärt documentary talking about this fantastic composer who is now 90 years old, and look at in how many different conditions and cities and musicianship ways his music is performed. They are performed by 30,000 people in the song celebration in Estonia, in Tallinn, but also performed in a tent with toy violins in Africa. It doesn't matter because the conditions are just one way of looking at it. But what we want to make real with music is another thing. And choral music is very, very advantageous in this way because you only have to carry your sound together, and which usually you have it if you are not really cold. And yeah, so it's
you carry your instrument with you.
You carry your instrument with you. You know, we go to towns with the Turkish National Choir. We go to towns in Anatolia where there is no piano, there is no building of the school. Then we had a very, very tragic earthquake some years ago, actually, 2 years ago, and in the southeast. And many people were displaced and many have lost families, but these children, they make music. And when they make music, they think only about now. They don't think about the past or future. And this is very valuable nowadays because we have to concentrate on what is actually alive in this world. You know, not the dreams of others that wanna fight or divide people or make or sell more weapons. You know, this is dreams of others, and it's not our dream.
Exactly. Along those lines, let's look at those hidden powers of singing. You've asked this striking question: how many people are singing together right now in this moment in the world? What do you think about the collective act of singing? What is it doing? And whether we realize this power that it has over the world or not?
Yeah, I think you would agree totally because you are also a very balanced and energy flow and yin and yang person. So I'm sure you will agree with this that singing is not only making music from the notes, but it's quite a meditative act. And if we consider this, yeah, I wonder how many people sing in the world right now. I don't know, but imagine that so many people in all the world right now, from Tokyo to Los Angeles, you know. From Johannesburg to Caracas, or from Istanbul to, you know, imagine to Oslo, imagine everybody. And there are so many people who are engaging in this act now. So they are quite doing the same thing because we are breathing in, we are synchronizing. You know, this fantastic study we talked about, this fantastic study where our heartbeats synchronize when we sing together, huh? So we try to synchronize our minds, our feelings, our thoughts, and even our hearts physically. And imagine how many people engage in this act right now. If you think about this, we are quite unorganized compared to sports, right? So because we go online, we see every live football or basketball match that is now in any kind of tournament in the world. But you know, the same is true for music too. And we just don't think about it. It's quite amazing, huh?
Absolutely. It's fabulous. It is one of the most performed and most involved activities on the planet. There are more people singing in choirs around the planet, and almost then the next one is sports. So people play sports, and the next one is singing a choir. I just heard a study, and so I'm going to be having another guest on later who's going to be talking about that, and so that's going to be exciting. But we see that some people still see choir as a hobby, and yet people cry, people feel goosebumps, and have these incredible spiritual experiences while singing. Why do you think that happens? And what does this act tap into?
I think, of course, it's a hobby. You know, it is. You can consider it as a hobby, but at the same time, it's not, because with what kind of dimensions can you open up with this? Imagine, you know, I had so many moments, and it's in a professional choir. I tell you, it's not only amateur choirs. It's in a professional choir where they live from singing, and they come to the same chair to sing in a rehearsal since 37 years, and still they cry in the Lacrimosa of Mozart Requiem. Still, because
It's true. It's
yeah, it's
true.
true, because it has direct connection to our lives, and as long as we are alive, we are able to get more out of this. You know, there was you asked about my mentor, so something that actually Johannes Prince taught me very, very early on was that he gave us this sentence, this musical sentence of Schubert, okay, in the Deutsche Messe, "Du heilest jeden Schmerz." That means you heal every pain, every wound, okay? And then he made us sing with this accent and with that emphasis and with another legato. And at some point we asked Johannes where it's going to stop, where it is perfect, where it will be okay, that's it. And something I don't forget until now is he said, "It will only stop in my graveyard." Because as long as I'm alive, I am trying to find a better way and a deeper way of expressing this Schubert music, this melody and this text. So if we think about this. How many times has been, for example, Mozart Requiem performed in this world? Maybe more than, I don't know, 10,000s, maybe more. I cannot just calculate, but every time we hear it, it's new because we witness it. It's quite like quantum physics, you know, because we are witnessing it is happening again. And in my professional choir, it is happening again every time we rehearse. And we are producing, we are part of the production. If you have another big event in your life, big life-changing event, and if you feel another way, then it's different than last year this time. So that's why not only for professionals but for amateurs, it's not only hobby. You know, people can have a lot of hobbies to, you know, spend their free time on. I do too. You know what I do? I do flight simulation. That's what I do. I like it so much, this piece. And I am really quite a nerd from YouTube. I learn all these, you know, things, how to fly. So yeah, okay. But I cannot fly a real plane. I'm sorry. But I do the simulation. But this is a hobby, okay? But for me, I mean, if you consider this act of collective singing, there is quite another dimension that we, because there are real people. You cannot do it with AI, huh? You cannot. You could make AI sing like a choir, but you cannot make the eye contact that you and I have been doing right now. Huh? And imagine we are singing a music. You know Wittgenstein, this philosopher, Wittgenstein, and he talks about when we have some words. For example, I talk about, for example, Requiem Aeternam, okay? Rest, eternal rest, okay? For me, Requiem Aeternam has an image. And for you, it has a different image. We talk in images. We talk in images. Huh? I think about another image. You think about another image from our perspective. But when we sing together, our images come together as a common film. That's really something you cannot find anywhere. So it's, I think, choir music is a bit more than flight simulation in that.
It's true, and you even talk about the AI can make all of these sounds, but you don't have the different collectives coming, the different selves,
No, no.
and every rehearsal, the reason why each rehearsal feels so different, even when you're doing the same exact music, is because different versions of each person is showing up. So it is a completely different ensemble. If we, like you mentioned, quantum physics, if the only true self is the one that's right here, there's no future, there's no past, it's just here. You are constantly a new version of self every morning, every moment. And therefore, every rehearsal is completely different because someone is bringing that new version of self, something that happened, a new joy, a new sorrow. And it's embedded like a code, like a coding into that music that we're performing. And so, with this idea of the self, you've said that choral singing is a journey toward the self, but done collectively. Is there more that you can explain to that that we haven't already covered? What does choir reveal about music that solo music can't?
I don't know, but there is something because you know what we, I think one key point that we never talk about, well, of course, sometimes we talk about it, but never really talk about this breathing together. Because you know, you talked about this, great that you mentioned this, this new self every moment, right? And this may sound to some listeners, oh right, like look at them now. They are talking about this spiritual stuff. But it is not. No, it is not spiritual stuff because it is totally physical and totally real. And you can touch it because this new has a lot to do with the breathing, I think. Because okay, if we breathe in, that's a sign to our brain that we are still living. I can tell you actually from personal memory, this one won't be very inspiring or a very good memory, but I had very hard COVID, okay? I was really in hospital for a long time. And you know, this thing has to do with your lungs, you know? And you really cannot breathe. That's basically what it does to you. And I also had from childhood asthma. That means I was already weak in that sense. So I really had these moments where I thought to my brain, I mean, not I, because it was automatic. My brain thought, okay, I am dying now. Okay. You just think about it. Okay. Because you can, if you don't breathe in, your brain automatically, I think there is a scientific explanation, and medical doctors would do it much more perfect than I do, but there is an explanation that your brain thinks, okay, I'm not breathing. Let's have this kind of hormones to make sure adrenaline, and because I'm gonna survive, huh? But your brain really thinks I don't live more anymore, huh? But when you breathe in, your brain thinks I live. So that I think it's a key to being alive, and that we do it collectively.
And on the other side of it, I'm reading a book by Alan Watts, and he talks about the exhale. Nirvana is to breathe out. And when we only breathe in, we die. We have to have the breath in and the breath out. And it's this in this release that we can take another inhale and the cycle continues. And so when we're singing and we're all together, we're breathing in that collective emotion, the phrase, anything we're about to breathe out, and then we breathe out together in that song, in that melody.
Jacqueline, you are expressing everything I say in a very elegant way. Thank you. But this exhalation, isn't it also because this is something we always talk with our colleagues in conducting master classes. Last week I was in Arezzo in Italy, and we had this fantastic group of conductors. The thing we talked mostly about was not auftakt, levare in Italian, or upbeat in your language, right? You say upbeat, huh? And you breathe in, but then what you do? And if you don't breathe out, the choir is the singers are like, look at this guy, what is he doing now? Because then you don't release the tension, and I think it's more important than breathing in sometimes for a choir starting point, huh? Or ending point too. So that's what we do in conducting. We start and we end, and the middle, I hope, goes well. But the action comes from breathing in and out. And look at now we are contemplating together. And think about it. We breathe in, we breathe out, we exhale with the same music, with the same word or a counterpoint, or the same rest. We wait. It's
The
also
same harmonic ratio,
these are, yeah,
the same vibration.
and or maybe sometimes with the same dissonance, so this collective act of inhaling and exhaling, I think there is something to it that is not there in solo music, which is very beautiful. But this is different.
Absolutely. I have told groups, and I realized it living down here in Costa Rica, because people are very much into energy and frequencies, and I realized that when we sing the same note, we're all singing an A440. It is, in my opinion, the only time in our existence where we are literally vibrating the same frequency. We're vibing together. There's that phrase, they're my same vibration, or we're vibing. But in choral music, when you're in a group setting, you sing the same note, you are literally vibrating your body, your voice, the same vibrational frequency. I think that's very beautiful. And like we said, we can only do that in a group. Otherwise, it's just our own vibration out into the world.
I think that brings us to the concept of resonance. Because it is, resonance is, okay, this frequency gets stronger, gets more volume, not by singing louder, but by singing in the same frequency. And this makes the resonance. So I think that's why is one of the reasons that I called my first choir, my first ensemble that I founded, and they still go on, Resonance, because it is a very, very interesting concept. It's not about being louder or being more stronger, or it's about listening. And I think that tells a lot of things about sometimes in the radio, in national radio or so, before a symphonic concert or before a cappella concert, they ask me in my country, they ask me, what do you need for singing in a choir? Very, very fantastic voice, right? Or great musical education. And I say, no. Yeah, of course, a good voice helps, but more important is to listen. Because, you know, I have auditions to sometimes 250 people for national choir, and you just take the ones who listen well, because that's what you need, huh?
That's such a great segue to this next portion, choir as resistance, peace, and change. Let's talk about the Estonian Let's talk about the Estonian singing revolution. That is a powerful example of choral music as a peaceful political force. Do you think singing could still spark a revolution or healing today?
I think it sparks every day. We are just not organized. Just imagine a world where everybody stopped singing. I think it's a difference. Huh? It's a difference. And everybody stopped making music altogether. That's a totally different, that's like a black and white world. Huh? This Estonian song festival that's roots back to like more than 150 years. And I was so lucky to be there this year. They do it every 5 years with 100,000 people, you know, sometimes more. And tens of thousands are on stage. They have the stage for this. And this 30,000 people, they go into the stage in 5 minutes. You know, sometimes my choir, 50 people cannot go in 10 minutes. You know, it's just incredible culture in Tallinn. And also in different Baltic countries, also in Riga, in Latvia, or in Vilnius in Lithuania, they have this singing tradition rooted to protect their language, to protect their way of life. So it has been very, very effective also in the late 80s. That's what they call the singing revolution. And I just want to recommend this film that's called Singing Revolution. It tells it all. That what happened in this oppression times, and how actually, because you have weapons and soldiers and they kill you, right? They can kill you. That's true. Sorry, but it's true. But what can they do if 100,000 people start singing together? They cannot kill you. What can they do?
Just piggybacking exactly what you were saying, after you mentioned that after World War II, the European Choral Association was founded by a French and German conductor who were walking on stage hand in hand declaring, if our youth can sing together, they won't fight. So how do you still believe this is true? You mentioned it. And is it more of a hope that we can keep striving for to fulfill?
Yeah, I credit this story to my other mentors, to Sonia Greiner. She's the Secretary General of the European Choral Association for a long time. She's also a mentor to me and a fantastic choral figure in Europe. And she told me this story. And this when these two people came to stage in the festival hand in hand, one of them was blinded in the war.
Oh, wow.
And the other was also a soldier. So it could be the other one that blinded this one. And these kinds of acts take a lot of courage, especially in times of trouble. And now it looks a very, you know, now it looks like a story, French and a German conductor, but think about it in different contexts right now, what's happening in Middle East, what's happening in Black Sea region. So this, think about if people can really do this today, they cannot. And it's a powerful statement, and we have to follow these paths, because these lessons have not been paid just to learn nothing. And what happened in these wars? We don't have to kill 1 million more people. It's just so simple. And I think this story still is valid today, but in different context. So we have to transfer this knowledge to, and it's, I think it's very, also very personal thing. I don't believe in these like peacemaking things that, you know, we wish for good things and it never happens. It never happens because we don't believe that we can do it in our own little lives.
We have to do it in our exact way. If it's not perfect the way we designed it, then kind of back to the what we were talking about. If it's not this exact framework, then we don't consider it worthy. Versus being a little more flexible.
Yeah, and I think all of us know this, that we are quite pessimistic about the world, but we don't have anything to do with it. It's not about. It's not because. The world is a problematic place, but not because of me.
I am not the problem
So
at all.
I'm not the problem. But to some extent, maybe I am a problem to some people. And maybe you see it in the choir. Maybe I can change something too. And I don't think this is all kind of utopian thinking. It's very real flesh and blood type of thinking that will lead us to the next century. I hope so. Because otherwise we just repeat 20th century again, and it's not really good.
Absolutely. And it's in these moments of silent reflection and in the quiet where we turn things off, where we put down the book and we just sit with who we are and how we feel and how we want to show up in the world. Those are very powerful moments, these moments of silence. I mean, you've even taught a master class with the Modern Conducting Academy called this Silence in Music. What role does silence play in your approach to the choral sound and the choral experience?
I mean, you are so kind to call it a masterclass because it's such a topic. You know, you can never master silence. If we would do it, we would go to nirvana and, not be in this world. But because I think in silence there is a lot of things to learn, and many people have thought about it, like John Cage, like Arvo Pärt, or other scholars. And silence has already a part before we start the music and after we end the music. So it's there. It's the point where we breathe together, or it's the point where we stop the last Gott of Richte mich Gott from Mendelssohn, or Ist, the last note, the chord. And then after this note, after this D major, there is a silence. And this silence is there for digesting what just happened. And it's also there to contemplate, okay, and it's part of the music. Also the rests, within the music. If you go to Bruckner, you see it perfectly. He's been so lucky to have this Linz Cathedral in Austria that has this great reverberation time. So then he puts one bar of rest, and then you take this music to take it in a congress hall in Istanbul. Doesn't work, of course, because you need this reverberation. But Bruckner has also taught a lot about this, the structure of music, the sculpture of music, and how silence works. And silence, I think, not only works in one way. You cannot say, okay, this is rest, because there are different kinds of rests. Some rests are pregnant to the next note. Some rests are, this, huh? Some rests are just there for closure. Some rests are for tension. And some rests are only so little that we don't hear it. For example, you sing a staccato, for example, from Brahms' piece Nachtwache. They said, trag ein Nachtwind. It's like a portato. It's a small articulation by Brahms, but in between every note there's a silence. Trag ein, pam, pam. And this silence has meaning. It's like the punctuation marks for our melody. So I think there is a lot to think about. This, as conductors, of course, especially, because what can a singer do? They can do many things, but only if the conductor plays the game as the same way. Because we see every time, this kind of conducting gesture. We work a lot about 4-4-6-8. There is crescendo, there is this entrance cue. But what do you do after everything ends?
There's not enough study about the before and after holding that container.
What do you do when there is nothing happening, but actually it is something happening, huh? So these kind of moments are, I think, very, very important to realize and talk about.
And as a conductor and mentor, we have an opportunity. This is the kind of philosophical idea that is not only for music, but for life. We are quickly becoming a society, a world where we have less and less space, less and less silence. And it's in the silence where we get to digest what just happened. We get to anticipate and build energy for what's going to happen. and in between to take little moments of reset, either way, to bring our energy back up or to calm it down. And when we don't get those bits of space in rehearsal, after rehearsal, before, driving home in the car, you know, if we don't have those moments and we're reminded to take and appreciate those moments, we're just go in this nonstop loop of go, 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 go. And we wonder why we're tired and we're not growing because we're not taking the moments of reflection and pause.
Yeah, that's very good advice for me.
Myself too. When I talk, it's more of just me reminding myself what I need to do.
Yeah.
You've also explored microtonal singing and led a masterclass on that and Makam traditions. What do these non-Western tonalities open up for choirs and audiences who may be only familiar with major and minor scales, what we hear in Western American music or European music a lot of times?
Yeah, I think for me, it was quite a discovery after actually I knew it, because in Turkey, in Turkish choral, in Turkish music tradition, we have all these kind of microtonal scales. But, you know, it's interesting when we try out with, especially with people who have no idea. Like last month, I tried it out in Austria and in Italy. And now next week, I'm going to try out in Ireland. Yeah, we did microtonal singing, which I think for a Western ear and Western brain, it's like, oh, it's not only green and blue, there is also turquoise. Now, because many, many instrumental players, of course, know about it. Because, you know, if you have a seventh note and it's going to the tonic, yeah, of course, we are doing the seventh scale a bit higher in violin, right? But this is more than it. It's not only higher seventh scale. It's also more than a pure third that we talk about always in pure intonation, you know, this resting third, you know, that's 14 cents lower than the piano. Yeah, that's all very good stuff. But actually sing out of tune, which is actually in tune, that's quite changing, because everybody, especially the Western music people who listen to this, and when we try out this, like, oh, now we sing out of tune. And I will never sing again now in tune, because they some people are very funny, because they say, they told me, now I can tell my conductor we were not flat all the time, because this was the right. So I think it's a discovery, because we have a fretless instrument. Our voice is a fretless instrument. So we have much more to discover. And this is all in relation to others. I think it's a good discovery. I encourage everyone to have a look at it. And you can have a look at it. You don't have to go to very, very classical stuff, you know. You don't have to go into like Turkish music from 500 years ago. You can just go into the internet. Now there is fantastic musician living in US and Turkey, Mehmet Ali Sanlıkol. He has built this microtonal harpsichord. Look at this now. With this harpsichord, with this organ, he jams with jazz players. You know, this is now interesting. You just go to type Makam jam, whatever, to YouTube, and you will see. I don't know. I mean, many, many opportunities to discover this. And it should not be only contemporary avant-garde music. There is a lot to learn from tradition.
Absolutely. And like you said, it gives a greater sound palette, awareness palette, vocal ability and playing ability palette when we have these different shades of tonality. Love it. Let's end with a few rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
Okay.
All right. First question. One word that describes what choir means to you.
Life.
A piece or project that changed the way you think about music forever.
Open singing with 5,000 singers in Hungary in 2015.
If you could launch one global choral initiative tomorrow, what would it be?
Simultaneous streaming of choir singing all over the world.
What do you hope every person, not just musicians, understand about choir after hearing this episode?
That it's life. It is about life. It's about being alive. Yeah, of course, it's music. It's, you know, we can categorize everything. You know, it's under culture, it's arts, and then there it's music and it's vocal music. You know, like go to a library, you find choral scores in this category, but it's not this category. You know, it's life, and everybody who sang one time in a choir, they know it. They cannot say they don't know it. They know, everybody knows this.
It's true. It's so true. Thank you, Dr. Burak Onur Erdem, for such a rich, visionary conversation. You've reminded us that choirs don't just sing, they give voice, they give emotion, memory, and even social change.
Oh, thank you.
To our listeners, whether you're a singer, a conductor, or someone who just loves music from the sidelines, consider what's possible when our voices unite. I'm Dr. Jacqueline Normandy, and this is Sounds Good, brought to you by Choirmate. Until next time, keep listening, keep singing, keep asking what music is really capable of doing. Thank you, Vodak.
Thank you.
You have heard Sounds Good, a podcast brought to you by Choirmate.